right, let's just say I lost the coin flip. I defer, John. What is up?
Okay, man, at the start of the season, most Laker fans would have said that the team in the West they're most worried about is the Clippers.
Yes.
But yesterday, playing with both Kawhi and Paul George, the Clippers never led and trailed by 33 points before losing to the Pelicans by 20 in New Orleans. The Clips, a team expected to contend for a championship, have now lost 5 of their past 7 games after starting the season 21-8. Are the Clippers, in your opinion, still the biggest challenger to the Lakers in the West, or is it somebody else now?
You know what? I still believe the Clippers will probably figure it out and be the biggest challenger to the West, although to the Lakers. Although I think the glaring problem with the Clippers is at point guard, where Lou Williams will initiate the offense when he's on the floor, and Patrick Beverley is the other guy who plays point, but they really don't have a clear cut and solid point guard for that team. I still think with Kawhi and playoff P just makes me laugh, playoff P. I still think they're probably the biggest challenger to the Lakers. Although, I'll tell you, Utah's really good. We saw them up close. They look really, really good. And if they are making their shots, they are tough. Who do you think the biggest challenger for the Lakers is in the West?
I kind of agree with you. I think the Clippers are probably going to figure it out. Utah, I love their coach, Quinn Snyder. He used to be a Laker assistant. I think Utah's for real. I don't know what Denver is. They don't.
I'm not sure what Phoenix is. Phoenix just looks like a hot team to me.
I like Phoenix though.
Yeah.
So I think I don't know who it is. If you made me pick one, I would say Clippers 2, Utah 3, Phoenix 4. But I'm totally guessing. And the Lakers got to get healthy. So I think it's pretty wide open.
Yeah. No. I think you've got the right order though. Clippers, then Utah, then Phoenix. And Phoenix, by the way, is such an entertaining team to watch. They will be fun to watch in the postseason this year. Chris Paul really has transformed them. All right. The New England Patriots signed Cam Newton last week, potentially to be a backup. Meanwhile, the San Francisco 49ers continue to be noncommittal to Jimmy Garoppolo. Pats may be interested in trading for Jimmy G. Is Jimmy Garoppolo a franchise quarterback?
Maybe in New England he is. I think, he got Mace, people forget, he took the Niners to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. I think his record as a starter is something like 21-6.
Very good, yes.
The problem is he's not going to... You can win the Super Bowl with a system quarterback. Trent Dilfer has won the Super Bowl. Brad Johnson has won the Super
Bowl. So you're immediately lumping Jimmy Garoppolo into system quarterback category.
I think so. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Would a system quarterback be... I don't think a system quarterback is a franchise quarterback, do you?
Right. Jared Goff took the Rams to the Super Bowl. I mean, Jared Goff's not a franchise quarterback. So you can do it with a guy that, just doesn't lose it. But I'm not sure that I would be the one trading for Jimmy G. I think he's probably overpaid based on what he brings to the table. How about you?
Completely agree. I hope he's still in San Francisco. We'll see that team twice next year. And give me the Rams twice over Jimmy G and the 49ers. It's to you.
All right. Kansas fired their football coach, Les Miles, late last week after a scandal, and now they're looking for a new coach. They fired the AD, too, basically because he hired Miles. Andy Staples from The Athletic has written about something radical. He thinks they should hire Kevin Kelly, the Arkansas high school coach who doesn't punt, to be the next Jayhawks head coach. Not only does Kelly's team never punt, it onside kicks after every score, it routinely runs trick plays, and his teams consistently beat teams with more gifted physical players. Kelly won 3 straight titles in his 11 years because he's a good play caller and motivator. But after he decided before 2014 to build his team completely around analytics, he won 6 state titles in 7 years. Kansas is bad, really bad.
Yep.
Since 2014, they're 7-98 in the Big 12. Kelly says he'll take the job if they pay him $90,000 a win. So he doesn't even want a traditional
contract. Get out of here. $90,000 a win?
Correct. He doesn't want a traditional contract. He says, if I go in there and go 0-12, they get me for free. Why wouldn't Kansas do this?
There is no reason not. First of all, it's Kansas, right? Kansas football is not some sort of heritage program.
7-98 in the Big 12 since 2014.
And $90,000 a win is genius. They've got absolutely nothing to lose and everything to gain. At the worst case scenario is that they're really entertaining.
And Mace, tell me you wouldn't, like, if Kansas was on, like, on a Saturday night or a Thursday night game, you and I, we would never even think of checking out a Kansas football game, but I would watch this for a half just to see if it worked.
Yeah, me too. I think they've got nothing to lose. I would do it in a second. Is there any chance of it actually happening?
Staples says there is. This guy has been looked at before, but he said it needs a perfect storm like this. It needs a big school that's really bad that has nothing to lose. And this is it. But I saw a story about this guy in Real Sports.
Yeah.
He doesn't come off as crazy. His big number one thing is, once you have the ball, never, ever give it up unless you have to. What you want in football at all times is the ball. He said, the more you have the ball, the better chance you have to win. And that's his philosophy. And he's figured out a way to make it work.
Kansas has absolutely nothing to lose.
All right, it's to you.
All right, Washington football team will not have cheerleaders for the first time since the NFL's longest-running cheerleading team was founded in 1962 with a co-ed dance team taking its place. Former Laker girl manager Petra Pope was hired last week as an advisor to use her 3+ decades of NBA experience to revamp the group. She says, I've been asked to create a more modern entertainment team that is inclusive and diversive. We just want to follow the mode of being more modern and a more modern franchise. Change is difficult, but I do feel that fans will love what we bring to the table. Our co-ed dance teams, the way of the future in professional sports. Can you imagine a time when it's not the Lakers, it's not the Laker girls, but it's a Laker dance team instead?
I don't know if the Lakers will go that direction, but I think it's smart for the Washington football team to go this direction. I don't know how much you read about the expose on Dan Snyder.
Stuff,
they were selling private access to photo shoots of these girls in exotic locations. They were making them go to parties and suggesting to them that they go home with Dan Snyder's friends. It was just rotten at the core. And so to hire somebody from the outside who's African-American, who's had success in other markets, including here, I think is really smart of them. I think they're probably, they've hired a bunch of women in, authority positions.
Yes.
Director of broadcasting is now female. I think this new CEO is now female. I think they're trying to clean up a swamp. So
right.
I think it's smart for them to do it, but I wouldn't connect the dots you're connecting. I don't think the Lakers will necessarily have Laker guys anytime soon.
You know, the Rams have got two guys on their dance teams.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think it's totally cool if that's the way it wants to go. I mean, first of all, it should be about dancing now and not about just ogling. It should be about dancing and not ogling.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think L.A. and Hollywood is about glitz and flash.
Yeah, and I think there's nothing. The Laker girls have never really been cheerleaders. They're a dance team.
Right.
And I think that falls into a different category than, pom-pom dance, pom-pom cheerleader types. I just think the era of cheerleaders may be passing. It's to you.
Okay. The Angels have been getting some good news from spring training. Shohei Ohtani has been clocked at 97 miles an hour on his fastball during workouts. Ohtani is coming off Tommy John surgery, and last year they only let him hit. He didn't pitch at all. His season was a disaster. He batted 190 as a DH. Now, Joe Maddon says they're going back to letting him be a two-way player. He's going to hit. He's going to pitch. Is it a good idea, in your opinion, to let Ohtani go both ways again this season?
I personally think it is. Given the Angels pitching staff, such as it is, I really, really believe they need Shohei Ohtani to throw, and they need him to throw well. He's looked great so far in free agency. And he would join a rotation with Andrew Heaney and Dylan Bundy and Jose Quintana, who used to be with the Cubs. I think they should let Shohei Ohtani throw. That is what they paid for. They paid for a two-way player, and it's a fantastic idea. Just captures the imagination. So, yeah, let him throw.
I'm 100% with you. I think that people tend to overprotect these guys. And they don't use them as, you know, as the full weapon. I remember when Deion Sanders used to go from team to team, and occasionally the team would say, well, Deion's too important, so we're not going to have him return kicks. You're not going to have him return kicks. He's the best punt returner I've ever seen.
Right.
If I had Deion, I'd let him play offense, defense, special teams, whatever. Otani's good enough to do both these things unless he suffers another injury. I think you turn him loose. I completely agree with you. And that's part of the attraction of having a guy like that on your team.
Yeah.
All right, it's to you.
It's to me. I did an interview with former Letterman head writer Meryl Marco. Actually, she was involved with Dave for years.
Right.
And it's for my podcast. She asked a question in one of her books, which I think is fascinating. This is the question. Is your life a sitcom or a soap opera? Which is it for you?
Oh, it's a sitcom. If people could see my daily life, you would just laugh at I laugh 10 times a day about the predicaments I get into. I told you today is a I have 5 games in the next 7 nights.
Yep.
You and I have a show every day this week. And so I don't know when I'm going to sleep. And my son came to me over the weekend. And he goes, hey, Dad, I got this geography test on Monday. And he goes, take a look at this. And he was so ridiculously unprepared for it that I spent like the next 5 hours going over old lectures
wow.
and notes with him and stuff. And I had to laugh because it's like somebody up there is just messing with me.
Yeah.
You know, like, and then so today I'll leave here. I'll go do the Golden State game. I'll get up tomorrow, and it's like lather, rinse, repeat. We got a show tomorrow. Then they play Minnesota tomorrow night. Wednesday, St. Patrick's Day. Another Laker game Thursday night. Lisa's leaving and going out of town Thursday at 5. So I missed her mom this weekend, and there are 3 Laker games this weekend.
Wow.
So I'm a sitcom. My life's a joke.
Yeah, my life is a sitcom also. Not for the same reasons as you, just because it is. I mean, you can tell from the show what a sitcom my life would be. I often thought it would be a good sitcom. I don't even know how you keep up with your work schedule. I mean, I do 3 extra podcasts a week, and I'm gassed. You're doing 5 games this week.
Yeah, like I thought today when we started the show, I don't know when I'm going to fill out this bracket. That's how
squeeze it in.
I will. It'll be done, but I will not. My head will not hit the pillow tonight until this bracket is filled out.
Excellent.
I may fill it out during the show. I may start open it right now and do it. But that's how it goes. But there are people like my wife plays tennis. That whole world is a soap opera.
Oh sure,
like she comes back with great stories.
I bet she does. You know, I bet she does. All right, there is your fast track for today. Coming up, we will check in on the Lakers with McTen, Dave McMenamin, news on Anthony Davis. Possible buyout candidates. That's coming up next for you. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, hey, what's going on? Lakers won on Friday. They beat Indiana. Tremendous performance for Kyle Kuzma in that game. They face Golden State tonight. Tonight's game is start at 7:30. Does that mean pregame starts at 6?
Yep.
Pregame at 6, so right after Sedano, LZ, and Cap. We are anticipating either a phone call or calling Dave McMenamin.
No, we got him.
And we got him right here.
Yeah.
McTen is on the line. Hey, what's going on, Dave? How are you?
I'm doing great, fellas. 5 games in 7 days this week. So let's see what happens tonight.
I was just lamenting that, Dave. I'm going to see you more than I'm going to see my family over the next 5 days. hey, would you be – I think I've kind of come to the conclusion that I would be surprised if the Lakers made a trade, but I think they're going to be really active in the buyout market. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I'm with you there, John. Listen, they – have once, and that would be shoring up the middle, and that would be finding a dynamic shooter. And would you be willing to mortgage your future to do so? I mean, what you're talking about, when you look at their future assets, it's guys like Alex Caruso and Talon Horton-Tucker. Yeah. And those guys are under cost-controlled deals that they'll be able to go above the salary cap to retain them in the offseason. If they were to trade them and then bring in a piece, of, you know, maybe that piece wouldn't work out perfectly. And then to fill in around the main hub of the Kuzma, Anthony Davis, and LeBron James, you'd be talking about minimum contract guys. And part of the reason why the Lakers haven't been knockouts this year is the minimum contract guys and Wesley Matthews and Marcus Gasol, who for all intents and purposes is a minimum contract guy, even though he got a two-year deal, they haven't really fit in as well as, you know, one would have hoped. And so to me, buyout is going to be the route that they go.
Yeah, I mean, they're only $3 million under their hard cap. It's going to be really difficult for them to actually make a significant trade without moving somebody like Talon Horton-Tucker or Kyle Kuzma or one of the young guys that, for example, Houston would be looking for in a P.J. Tucker trade. Who are the most likely buyouts? Like, do you think Cleveland is going to buy out Andre Drummond? Do you think Houston's going to buy out P.J. Tucker? What are you hearing?
I've heard the same thing that's been reported on the Drummond front, that Kobe Altman and the Cavs front office is intent on getting some sort of return to not go the buyout route. But if you're going to, first of all, that's going to be difficult for them to find a trade partner to match the 75% of the $28.7 million that Drummond is owed. So you're going to have either another team with a high level expiring deal in order to do it, or I just don't see Andre Drummond, as productive as he is, I mean, he's a walking double-double. I don't see someone, another team, trading an asset that is under contract for several more seasons in that salary range in order to get him. Let's say, like, Kyle Kuzma would fit that bill. But Kyle Kuzma is an ascending asset where Andre Drummond has probably reached his prime and will be at some point on the way down. That doesn't make so much sense to me. In terms of P.J. Tucker, again, way more cost-friendly deal, and so it wouldn't take nearly as much in terms of pieces going out in order to retain him. And obviously, that new front office there after Daryl Morey left, Raphael and company, they're doing a complete overhaul, and they're going to need pieces in order to facilitate that overhaul. But again, to me, he seems like a classic buyout candidate, but just, you know, this is the posturing that you get 2 weeks before the trade deadline. Nobody wants to give up something that they potentially get something in return for.
Dave McMenamin is joining us. Dave covers the Lakers for ESPN. Dave, give me your best sense of when we might see these three guys. Marc Gasol, who's out for health and safety protocols. Alex Caruso, who just went into the concussion protocol after he whacked his head the other night. And then the big one is Anthony Davis, where we hear at least 2 weeks, and Chris Haynes reported today it's probably 3 weeks or longer. Give me a sense for those three guys when you expect to see them back on the court.
Yeah, John, I'll start with AD. I heard 2 to 3 weeks. I couldn't get it confirmed the day before the Lakers put out the new update information after the evaluation. And so what Chris Haynes reporting is totally along what I've heard. I think you're looking at 3 weeks minimum. As for Caruso, you know, I've covered guys with concussions over the years. I think Pau Gasol missed close to 2 weeks after getting one. I've also covered guys who missed one game. So I think that's touch and go. And as for Gasol, and I reported this over the weekend, like, we have not been giving the nature of the health and safety violation by the Lakers. They haven't told us what is causing Marc Gasol to continue to be in that protocol. But we do know that if it was a contact tracing violation, that would only require 7 days along with a negative test, because we went through that with Dennis Schroeder.
Right.
Well, as of this back-to-back being finished, it's going to be 16 days where he's still out. So, you know, I don't want to cast aspersions. I don't want to get into someone's medical privacy here. But you can start to lead to some conclusions And then, you know, I can talk about someone else who I covered. I was, you know, paying attention to the Sacramento Kings going into the bubble as one of the teams that ESPN had me assigned to. And the Kings had a player in Alex Len who didn't return a negative test for 21 straight days. And, you know, I know we're used to thinking of athletes being, you know, physical specimens and being accustomed to overcoming this disease that can be quite treacherous. But in the athletic community, it hasn't hit as hard. But, you know, everybody's body treats it differently. So I wouldn't even venture a guess where we're at with Marc Gasol.
Dave McMenamin is with us, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. He covers the Lakers for ESPN. So this stretch of games, and now we're going to look at, we're talking about 2 to 3 weeks without Anthony Davis, potentially. What did the next 2 to 3 weeks look like? John, I think you said that's 9 games, which stretches into 2 weeks.
It was 9, counting the Golden State game the other night. So, Dave, I think tonight it's at least 8 more before we get another update, right?
Yeah, and so if you're going to extend out to 3 weeks, you're talking about 15 games. That's a healthy chunk.
And so what are we talking about? Are we talking about a slightly above 500 team? What are we talking about without AD over this stretch?
I mean, let's just look at this week, right? You have the Warriors, a winnable game. Minnesota Timberwolves, one of the worst teams in the league.
Sure.
Charlotte, obviously young talent, but certainly it should be a winnable game. Atlanta should be a winnable game. And Phoenix is, you know, a team that at full strength, I don't view to be that much inferior than the Lakers at full strength. So that's a tough one. But you know, if you just take care of the wins you're supposed to, like you should be winning, you know, 4 of every 6 or whatever. So I'd say like just slightly above 500 is a little bit of a low expectation for this group, just because there are elites in the league this year. And there's 5 or 6 teams you put in that category. And then I think there's a lot of mediocrity and there's some cellar dwellers. And so the Lakers should continue, despite missing a top 5-6 player in the league in Anthony Davis, if the rest of the guys stay healthy, that's where it hurts them. A thing like the Caruso concussion to occur, a thing like the Gasol, you know, their margin for error without Anthony Davis is not expansive. But if they have most of the role players in, LeBron in go mode or go time, as he termed it, they'll be fine. And it's about trying to stay as healthy as possible until you get Anthony Davis back. And then you shore things up for a month and a half or 2 months. And then, you know, then they really get to try to repeat as champion.
Dave McMenamin with us. Last thing for me, Dave. I asked Mason this in Fast Track. I'm curious what you think. The Clippers are 4-7 in their last 11 games. Last night with Kawhi and Paul George, they got blown out in New Orleans. They were down by 33 at one point. I think they're still the Lakers' biggest competition in the West. I would expect them to be the toughest hurdle to clear, but I'm not sure. What do you think?
I'm still there, John, because I know the Utah Jazz got some shine this season, and rightfully so. They had such a wonderful tear there, but they've started to come back to normal.
Right.
And just when you look at the idea of a playoff series is both sides know everybody's strengths and weaknesses, and they're going to exploit the weaknesses as much as possible. And then what do you have that is kind of impenetrable to scouting? And that's why the Clippers I put above the Jazz, because Kawhi Leonard is, when he is in his correct mode, when he's in two-time finals MVP mode, is pretty much impenetrable to scouting. And that's what the Lakers have, two guys like that in Anthony Davis and LeBron. And that's where I would put, you know, the Clippers above any other opponent, the Jazz, even the Suns, as great as Chris Paul is, he doesn't have the physical ability to overpower schemes the way a Kawhi could. And so, yeah, I mean, yeah, they're going through some struggles right now. Ty Lue is frustrated about it. He's been as animated as I've basically seen him this season after that disappointing loss they had last night. But I think their personnel will stay on track big picture. They'll get a top 4 seed in the West. And they have one of the best wing players of the generation in Kawhi to match up against the best wing player of the generation in LeBron.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Hey, listen, Dave, thanks a lot for coming on. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds great.
Thanks,
all right.
Dave.
There's Dave McManaman, McTen, at McTen. All right, coming up next for you, Trevor Bauer is pissed off at Major League Baseball, and he's got a very good reason for it. I'll explain that. Plus, I want to find out if John has seen any of the Oscar nominees for Best Picture. That's coming up next for you, too.
That's a good question. I haven't seen the list yet.
Mason, Ireland, 710 ESPN. And by the way, I have got my official sleeper pick for the NCAA tournament, John.
Oh, who is it? Minnesota?
In honor of Juan.
Minnesota?
Who is a proud graduate of this university. I'm going with UCSB with a first-round upset. They're a 12 seed over Creighton.
Juan has told me, normally beats a 5. You've just got to figure out which one.
That's going to be the one. That's going to be the one. So, and you can go go to our Twitter handle, at ESPN Los Angeles, and fill out your bracket. You can compete against everybody here at the station. Michael, have you done yours yet?
Not yet. I might just look at it, because I think I've watched one college game.
Yeah,
for 10
I've watched none.
Yeah.
Michael, it's a guessing contest.
Yeah, I know. But even even when you watch the full schedule, you don't know who's going to do. But hey, this might be the first time Gonzaga does what since 1976.
Goes undefeated,
right,
and wins the national title.
Who was the last team to do it?
UNLV?
No.
Ireland? Indiana.
Yeah, Ireland knows this stuff. You're like an Ira Steve Hartman.
I'm like a what?
No, like no, Ireland's like a
Michael,
Ira Steve.
Oh, Ireland's like Steve Hartman,
yeah. I have more useless trivia in my brain than any human being. It's
okay, so Trevor Bauer is pitcher for the Dodgers, and Trevor has got a signature logo merchandise thing called Bauer Outage. Okay. And it is this letter B with a little lightning bolt in the middle. It's actually a pretty cool logo. So he sells this stuff on his website, poweroutage.com. I'm not getting any endorsement money from this, but it's actually pretty cool stuff. And he was alerted by Major League Baseball that, quote, an unauthorized logo was visible on your undershirt during your club's spring training games on both March 6th and March 11th. There is a tiny, tiny little B like Bauer Outage printed on it. And I'm looking at the photo. It's no bigger than a half an inch tall. And Major League Baseball is threatening to fine him for this. And Bauer's point is, hey, you tell us, get out there and market ourselves as personalities. And when you do, they find it strictly prohibited. Does Bauer have a point? And I'm telling you, this thing is half an inch tall.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. I think the uniform police in every sport are a little strict. But on the other hand, that's very valuable space to somebody. And if he does it, then what's to stop then, you know, Clayton Kershaw from putting his own logo, and then Walker
guys,
Buehler from doing his.
Guys start looking like NASCAR drivers.
Right. And so I understand how they're trying to keep the uniforms uniform, but I probably wouldn't red flag it, for lack of a better term, unless it was really, really blatant. And this doesn't sound like it was.
No, it absolutely was not blatant. It is a tiny, tiny little B on his belt. But I find it just ridiculous. And, you know, you kind of can't have it both ways. We always say, the NBA, they do such a great job of marketing themselves as individual players, right? Mm-hmm. It's a game of stars, yep, because everybody markets themselves, yep, really well. Major League Baseball, nobody markets themselves especially well. Bauer may be one of the very best at it. Would you say Bauer markets himself better than any player in Major League Baseball?
Maybe Bryce Harper.
Bryce Harper does a lot.
He does okay. But yeah, you're right. Like, does Mike Trout even have a national commercial?
I think I saw him do a Subway
commercial.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
But Mike Trout isn't very marketable.
Yeah.
You know.
Got the personality of Spock?
Yeah, he doesn't.
Spock!
And, you know, you can tell this when they come back at you with, well, Mike Trout lets his play do the talking. Well, they're, you know, Mookie Betts is a great player, but you can have some flamboyance, you can have some fun, you can be more marketable if that's the way you want to be.
Yeah, Mookie's got star power.
Who would you rather go to dinner with, Trout or Kawhi?
Trout.
Trout. Yeah, Trout.
Michael, I tell this story all the time about the time I met Kawhi.
Yeah.
We were at the scorer's table in San Antonio, and he walked over to say hello to you. And he walked over, he just stuck his fist over the table, like to give you a fist bump. And Michael Mace says, "Hey, Kawhi, man, I'm proud of you. You're doing great. I've been watching you, and you're having a great year. Keep it up. Do you know Ireland?" And Kawhi kind of looks at me, and he nods. I stick my hand out, and Kawhi taps my hand, and he goes, "Kawhi, say hi to your family for me, man. Great to see you." And Kawhi nods and walks away.
Yeah.
We had a whole conversation with him, and he never said a word.
Yeah, nice chat. He's like the black Marcel Marceau.
And I said to Michael, I said, "Do you actually know him?" You go, "Yeah, him and Clay played youth together for like 2 years.
Oh, Kawhi is the greatest. By the way, guys, I got a complaint.
Yes, yeah, go ahead.
I was watching the Stones concert the other night, right? 2 hours.
Where was this?
There was the Shine a Light concert a few years back. So, but okay. I was still watching.
Michael goes on YouTube and watches a lot of
this. Okay, this is on regular TV, on regular. Okay. And for 2 hours, Mason in Ireland, they did not play their greatest song. You know what that is, right?
Well, Sympathy for the Devil. No,
well, that's one of them. That's one of the top five.
Michael, I think you think their greatest song. Well, I think it's Gimme Shelter.
Yes, that's it.
Okay.
How do they go for 2 hours and not play Gimme Shelter with Lisa Fisher right there? That's like going to Morton's and just eating a salad.
I think Gimme Shelter might be the greatest rock song
of
all time.
I agree.
Well, why do you think they skipped it?
I don't know.
Well, part of it could be that you need a really good female singer to pull it off.
Well, Lisa Fisher was there. She's
but
the one.
But she's not the one that did it. That Mary?
Mary, whatever. But Lisa does it just as well. I've seen it. Yeah, she does
do it
just as good. Yeah, she is great. She basically steals the show when she does it.
Yeah, it's such a great part.
I don't understand it.
A female singer, and Mick like defers to her.
Yeah.
And, yeah. I
was so frustrated sitting there amazed for 2 hours. I said, "Did I miss it?" I had to go through the thing again. I had to rewind and say, "Did I miss
Champagne
it?"
Champagne problems, my friend. Oh, champagne problems.
But still, come on.
So, Mace, I learned a lot about that line in Gimme Shelter, the female part in Gimme Shelter from a doc you told me to watch.
Yeah.
20 Feet from Stardom.
Oh, yeah, 20 Feet from Stardom is an unbelievable doc.
I've seen that one.
That woman's name was Mary Clayton.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they were at the Stones were at the Capitol Records building in Hollywood on late at night, like 11:30 at night, and they were recording Gimme Shelter, and Mick or Keith or somebody goes, "You know what we need here? We need a woman. We need a female voice." And one of the engineers said, "Well, I know this woman, Mary Clayton, but she's 7 months pregnant, but she just lives around the corner." So they call her, and her husband answers the phone, and the engineer tells what's going on. He goes, "I think I got to get her out of bed, but I think she'll do it. They're the Rolling Stones." And he did. She in her bathrobe, her husband drove her over to the studio. She recorded that part. And it took them two takes, and she was done. She was there for 20 minutes.
That's amazing.
And it's
I always wonder about those backup singers. You know, they're standing there, they're doing backup, and they probably are unbelievable vocalists, and they're backing up somebody else, and they just didn't have that, whatever that thing is. Last night on the Grammys, a performer named DaBaby had backup singers that were all like older women dressed in choir gear. It was actually totally cool.
Well, if you want to learn that world, Mace, that documentary you turned me on to, that's the whole movie. It's 20 Feet from Stardom. It's like the story of what, you know, who is a really famous backup singer. Do you guys watch any of the Lethal Weapon movies?
Of course.
I've seen them, sure.
So the woman who plays Danny Glover's wife in all those movies is a woman named Darlene Love.
Oh, sure.
Who is an iconic singer, mostly, though, as a backup. So David Letterman used to bring her on every year at Christmas to sing Christmas carols. But Darlene Love is a big part of 20 Feet from Stardom.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest mysteries in music is how Lisa Fisher isn't as famous as Tina Turner or say, Patti LaBelle.
How you get,
because
Michael, how
she
you
is
get
so
that
good.
20 feet?
What is that next?
Yeah.
How do you make up that 20
feet? She is
feet?
As good as Tina Turner or Patti LaBelle, but why didn't she go out on her own and make it big as those girls?
Yeah, there's just a something.
Yeah.
There's a something, right?
It's
that
like
you
YouTube,
can't put
I guess.
Your finger on.
I mean, it's like Mace. Why isn't Mason bigger? If you could go out on your own, Mace.
True.
You should be
why
like Michael Jackson and go out on your own, Mace.
Why am I not bigger? What?
Yeah.
That's a good question, John. Why am I not a bigger deal?
You need to get away from Ireland.
Oh, I think you are a very big deal. Just ask you.
All right, coming up next for you is Radio Tinder. I think we've got Lindsay zeroed in on the phones. We're having all kinds of technical stuff today.
By the way, is it my game today?
Yes.
It is your game,
good.
Michael.
I got a good one.
All right, good.
Dude, it's not too hard, is
no,
it?
No, no, no. This one's about, matter of fact, it's about lead singers for music.
Okay. Oh, nice. Good. Okay, good. That's coming up for you at 3:45. Coming up next is Radio Tinder, Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. Okay, we're trying to do this today. Lindsay is on a telephone, and she has got Radio Tinder for us. Lindsay, what do you got?
Well, guys, we're going to start off with one of your favorite topics, and that's food.
Yes.
Joining the many flexitarian options offered by names like Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat, Juicy Marbles, which is the name of the company, has now developed a plant-based steak. The filet mignon is made with soy protein altered to mimic the texture of muscle and fat marbling for a faithful taste experience.
Mm.
According to Juicy Marbles' co-founder, their biggest challenge was replicating the marbling. He said, the most expensive steaks in the world are known for their lush marbling. It takes a lot of energy and a rare breed of cow to attain that. With plant meat, we can control it and thus, over time, can scale up our steak production and bring down the price. Would you be willing to try plant-based steak?
Swipe right. I'm not giving up my steak under any circumstances. I love a good New York. In fact, I was thinking about it today. I would love to head over to Boa and grab a really good New York steak right now. I'm never giving up meat. I know Bill Gates says someday we'll all be eating synthetic meat. I'm not going to be. I'm going to be eating real meat, real steak, USDA grade A beef.
I think Mason's position on this is the right one, but your question was, would I be willing to try plant-based steak? And I would be willing to try it. I think I will end up where Mason is and just go back to the regular steak, but I won't rule it out because you never know until you try it. I'll have one plant-based steak. What the heck? Well, I mean, what, Michael, you wouldn't try it?
I mean, isn't that the same as veggie burger?
Yeah, same as a veggie burger.
Yeah, I've had that. It's all right, but no.
It's like you're not kidding anybody.
It's not. Yeah. Wait, there's a difference between the veggie burger and then the soy-based products. They're two completely different tastes because one is made with a whole bunch of vegetables and one is mainly based on with soy protein.
Right, but we know you're a vegetarian and you're trying to sell all this stuff like it's some religion to us and we're just not buying it.
Can I put ketchup on it, Lindsay?
You put whatever you want on it.
Put whatever you want on it.
All right. Nah, let's stick with this. I'm like Mace. Me and Mace are like two peas in a pod. Maybe you and me should date Mace.
No, thank you.
Michael, you're on the
wrong
team.
You're out of my age range, dude.
You and I have so much in common, Mace. Oh, I'm out of your age.
I'm too old for you,
Mace?
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
I'll just come
right out and say
you have a you have an age limit, huh?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
Well, yeah. I mean, just look at him. Lindsay, what's next?
All right, so speaking of relationships, J-Rod has apparently reunited. On Sunday, Alex Rodriguez flew to the Dominican Republic to reunite with fiancée Jennifer Lopez after the two announced that they're working through something.
You know why?
Over the weekend, after multiple sources confirmed to People that Lopez and Rodriguez had called it quits, Rodriguez told photographers, quote, I'm not single. The two are working on their relationship, a source close to the situation has told People. Do you think that A-Rod and J-Lo are destined for the altar?
Yes, because instead of going to a relationship counselor, they went to their accountant.
But they're not married yet, Mike.
Well, they're going to get married once they see how much money they can make together.
Yeah.
What do you mean? So you're saying it's a marriage of financial gain?
Of course. You think that's true love? Come on.
Well, what's weird is Jennifer Lopez now, we know her last eight boyfriends.
Eight.
And she had three of them were husbands. And then, like, Ben Affleck, remember that? They were engaged, and that didn't take.
But in fairness, how many girlfriends did you have in your life? Everybody dates people. It's just she happens to date famous people. So we know about it.
Yeah, I think A-Rod would be husband number four, right?
Do you guys think they're in love?
I think they are.
You think they are,
I believe in love. They seem very happy together.
Okay.
Well, the rumor is that the reason they broke up is over, you know me, I watch all those dumb reality shows. If the reason is that A-Rod hooked up with this girl from Southern Charm, which is what the Page Six is reporting, the New York Post is reporting, man, I wouldn't have put her in the top 10 of the girls on those reality shows. I don't know. So if that's true, A-Rod definitely has an issue.
All right. What's the last one, Lindsay?
You know, well, I was going to say, you know what's funny is me and Mace were talking about this in our pre-show meeting. Jose Canseco, apparently, he predicted their breakup months ago because he said, you know, I guess back in like November, he said that A-Rod is a jerk and that he's a cheater. And he claimed that he was actually cheating on J-Lo with his ex-wife, like Jose Canseco's ex-wife, Jessica. And then when it happened, he quote tweeted himself when everyone was saying they broke up the other day. He quote tweeted himself saying, "Oh, that A-Rod guy is so predictable," which it's kind of hilarious coming from Jose Canseco. But Mason was right. He's like, "Man, that guy's a real snitch."
Oh, yeah, Canseco? But he's normally right. Oh, yeah. Everybody says he's full of crap, and he turns out to be right.
Yeah, but he still says
I kind of have to believe him on this one.
All right, you got one more?
All right. Yes, one more here. So when Joe Rogan packed up and moved to Texas last year, you guys know I'm a huge fan of his.
Yep.
He said he was seeking more freedom and space, and he left behind two multi-million dollar estates in Southern California. Now his return to L.A. seems unlikely in the near future as both of those homes have been sold. Rogan has said that he plans to open a comedy club in his new city of Austin, Texas, and it seems like many of his successful comedian friends will be following him. A number of them have already made the move to Texas. Do you think that the comedy scene in L.A. is ever going to return to what it used to be?
My answer is yes, because what happens in L.A. is if you're a stand-up comic and you're successful, producers, executives from television networks all come and look at you and say, "I think we can build a show around you. You'll be a good sitcom star." This is where most people have broken out of. And I understand there's going to be, look, Austin's a really cool city, and I'm sure there will be a great comedy scene. But still, if you want to get seen by the networks and by Amazon and by Netflix and all those guys for a chance at a big opportunity like a sitcom, I think you got to be in LA.
I totally disagree. I think that you can hit out of anywhere, and it's because everything goes viral now. If you do a funny stand-up bit in Austin and somebody records it, a guy in LA can watch it on his computer. You don't have to actually go to the comedy clubs anymore. I think that you can hit anywhere. I don't think that necessarily means that comedy won't come back in LA. We have a lot of clubs already that are built in, but I don't think you have to. I disagree with Mason that you have to be in LA if you get a TV show. I think you can do that from anywhere. I mean,
but
if you're
I'm
the
not,
cast
I
of SNL, they've come from all over the country,
but a lot from the Groundlings.
Right, but they've come, like, half of those people are from Chicago. There's a lot of people from New York. There's a lot of people from, you know, I was reading a story that Heidi Gardner on that show was a hairdresser.
She's so funny.
You know, was doing comedy for her friends, and somebody sent a tape to Lorne Michaels.
Here's the thing. There's this great idea right now that everybody leave L.A., that you know, everybody's getting out of town. I am never leaving L.A. I mean, this is the town that I consider to be home. I am staying here for the rest of my life. I'm not going to escape to Austin or anywhere else. I love living here.
You know, one thing that I think you mentioned about people getting sitcoms and TV shows and stuff like that getting discovered in L.A., I feel like I listen to a lot of podcasts, and like I said, Joe Rogan has a ton of his comedian friends on there. It seems like that's not necessarily the goal for many, if not most
true.
Of them these days.
It's true.
Because they all say, you know what, yeah, it's great to have all this money, like when you get hired to do these sitcoms and stuff like that. But a lot of them really love being able to have their own, like, YouTube show or their own podcast where they can be their own boss and sell the ads and make a decent amount of money and still be able to do what they love to do instead of being, you know, typecast as this nerdy, funny guy or whatever Hollywood may cast them as. So I think that's an interesting aspect of it, too.
All right, there you have it. There's your Radio Tinder for today. Coming up next for you, free agent news involving the Rams. We got that coming up for you next. Plus, the Lakers will be without Anthony Davis for the next 2 weeks where he will be evaluated, although Chris Haynes from Yahoo says it could be 3 weeks or longer. What does that mean for the Lakers? Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN.